You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It comes as no surprise that Rudy Giuliani is announcing his decision to drop out of the race for the Republican nomination later today. But I think everyone was surprised when John Edwards announced that he would end his presidential bid. Joining me now is WNYC's own Brian Lehrer, who's been discussing this story all morning. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Leonard.
So has there been any indication as to why John Edwards is choosing to drop out now rather than wait until after Super Tuesday next week?
Not really. I have to admit I'm one of those surprised people because I thought there was a rationale to him continuing. And the major media were even starting to promote that rationale. I think there was a Times article that probably picked up on a Politico.com article from last week, which said that because the Democratic primaries are not winner-take-all affairs in almost any case, Edwards had enough support. He was getting about, you know, maybe 15% in most of these elections. He had enough support to win some delegates. And with the prospect of Clinton and Obama not making it to the nomination until the convention, there was that possibility that it might actually be a brokered convention, that Edwards, if he gathered up some delegates, might be able to play kingmaker, and in so doing, might be able to get some kind of a deal, either for himself in somebody's cabinet or for his issues, to get some platform planks on poverty or things like that.
Well, right now, the Times says he has 12 delegates, although it's always unclear as to just how many delegates anyone has. He did say after the New Hampshire primary that he was going to stay in the race until the convention, and he said it as recently as 2 days ago. But do you think he was hurt when John Kerry threw his support behind Barack Obama?
I think that he might have felt hurt, but I don't think...
After all, he was his running
mate
in the last election.
You know, I don't, from what I gather, they were never so close. But this is one of the things that I think is disappointing to Edwards supporters, because Kerry took Edwards because he felt forced to take Edwards, because Edwards had become something of a star in the Democratic primaries that year. And the passion that he had for the issues, you know, remember, so many Democrats in 2004 voted on what they thought was Kerry's electability when they really wanted Dean or they really wanted Edwards. And so they were never so close. But that also gave Edwards a good starting point this year, and he campaigned really for 4 years between the two elections. And so those who are Edwards supporters, I'm sure, are very disappointed today.
He was the only candidate who was using the FEC public financing program. And I'm assuming that fundraising was a major factor in all of this. It usually is the reason people drop out of races.
I'm sure. And I haven't seen any good reporting that I've noticed on his finances up to the minute, and excuse me, whether that's you know, making it mandatory for him to drop out because he's just out of money. But he rolled all his dice. He bet all his marbles on Iowa, much as Rudy Giuliani bet all his marbles on Florida.
And you're saying both of those candidates lost their marbles?
Well, we'll leave that to the listeners to decide. Maybe one lost his marbles before the other one. But you know, if he had come in first in Iowa, then the money would have started pouring in.
Yeah.
But when he didn't, even though he came in second, you know, a fraction of a percent above Hillary Clinton, which was eye-opening in its own right, if he had then gone on to do a little better in New Hampshire or in South Carolina, which is the state he was born in, the state that he won, a state that he won 4 years ago, then maybe money would have rolled in. So money probably is an issue.
And then, of course, his poll numbers haven't been thrilling, somewhere between 11 and 16% pretty steadily. If there had been any kind of jump, Rudy Giuliani did have those encouraging early poll numbers. And you have to wonder why he was so appealing 4 years ago and why he seems to have lost that appeal. Perhaps one of the reasons is some people say he hasn't been treated all that fairly by the press.
Right. And some say the media was responsible for killing the Edwards campaign by not taking him seriously. I tend not to think that that's so true. I mean, he and his wife make a great story in traditional commercial media terms, soldiering on through her illness. He is young and attractive looking. I watch what the cable channels are up to politically all the time. And I think he was on CNN and MSNBC a lot, and probably a good deal more than Clinton or Obama, and probably because he made himself more accessible because he was always in third place.
Well, he has said that the announcement has nothing to do with the health of his wife, Elizabeth, who has cancer. But we don't really know the whole story. On the other hand, the big surprise to me is that John Edwards' major issue appeal was as an economic populist. And we have had a recent economic downturn. There are people predicting recession. You would have thought that it would have given a boost to the candidate who was hitting on that issue hardest.
You would think that that would benefit Edwards on the Democratic side and Romney on the Republican side. But I think people tend to attach their likes and dislikes to whatever issue is the issue of the moment. There was a very interesting result from the exit polls in Florida last night. A majority of the people who said that the economy was their number one issue voted for McCain, even though Romney is seen as the economy doctor and McCain is seen as the national security doctor, and that's how they run. But I think really what it was there were groups of people who were favorably inclined toward McCain. There are a lot of veterans in Florida, a lot of senior citizens in Florida, and others who, for whatever reason, liked McCain. And so then whatever their issue is, they would tend to say, well, yeah, my candidate's going to be the best on the issues. And I think it's the same thing on the Democratic side. It's not so much that most people, a lot of our listeners do, Leonard, but I think that a lot of other people don't just look at the policy positions and say, well, this one matches up the best, and look at it in that rational way.
Well, he was supposed to have already spoken, and he's notoriously late for things. We probably should invite some listener calls in hopes that he shows up soon, but also soliciting some ideas from our listeners. Our number here is 212-433-9692. I'm Leonard Lopate talking with Brian Lehrer about the surprise announcement, although no one's surprised by now because we've been hearing about it all morning, that John Edwards is dropping out of the race. And interestingly, Rudy Giuliani immediately signaled that he was going to throw all of his support behind John McCain. But Edwards seems to be soliciting pledges on his top issues, especially poverty, from the other candidates before he decides which one to endorse.
And I don't know much about that. I don't know what's been going on behind the scenes. Again, I haven't heard reliable reporting yet on that. One would think that he might be doing that with respect to who to endorse. I saw a report on the New Republic's website that said perhaps he was in discussions with Obama to make a deal to make him the attorney general in an Obama presidency, though the writer said he would probably be better suited for labor secretary. Those kinds of deals may be in the works. We know that Giuliani and McCain were in talks over the last few days when it became clear that Giuliani was going to have to drop out. And you wonder if he might be offered the attorney general position in a McCain presidency. It might be something up Rudy's alley. He was an assistant attorney general in the Reagan administration. Don't know yet what's there for John Edwards.
Well, I would think labor secretary would be too low profile for someone
maybe.
Who has been so prominent in national politics.
And
so maybe that's the reason attorney general, or even I can't imagine what else.
Well, some people are blogging in the last few hours, hey, how about vice president again?
But I can't see anybody doing that, running as vice president under two different people.
Right. I don't know if it's ever been done. Joe Lieberman, who was appearing with McCain the other day, was asked the question, and he said, been there, done that.
Mm. We have to wonder how important John Edwards' endorsement will actually be. In fact, all of these endorsements, I don't know whether the Kennedy endorsement of Barack Obama is going to have much of an effect. Is it swaying a lot of votes? Are there people out there saying, oh, gee, I really care what Caroline Kennedy thinks about this race?
Probably not. I think it's
Ted Kennedy?
I think it's a media phenomenon. You know, I think that I don't know how that's being. Well, I mean, I've seen many ways that the Kennedy endorsement is being played. One way that it occurs to me that it's intended to be influential is with older white voters who, or older voters actually at all, because there's to some degree a generational split among African Americans, who might be inclined toward Hillary Clinton. So you get an old lion of the Democratic Party like Kennedy, and even Caroline Kennedy, who's, you know, right in the demographic sweet spot for Hillary Clinton. She's a 50-year-old woman. And so maybe it's, you know, maybe they're hoping it's going to work in that respect. I think the Kennedy endorsement is a little bit more of a media phenomenon than it is a voter phenomenon, but that remains to be seen.
Let's go to a call. We have Gregory on the line. Hi, Gregory. You're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Hi, Brian.
Hey
there.
I've
been listening all morning. I've been a Edwards supporter since 2003 and was planning, actually, I live most of my time in Seattle, Washington, was planning to caucus for him on the 9th in Washington State, and I'm just really, really disappointed at his choice to withdraw today as opposed to waiting through Super Tuesday or even just through the debate on Thursday night to, you know, perhaps drive home some additional points about the value of his candidacy or the perhaps problem with Hillary Clinton and the possibility of having her as our Democratic.
So that sounds to me like you intend to go to Obama next.
Oh, I'm there. You know, I'm there already. You know, I'll probably caucus for Obama. But, you know, I really felt that Edwards had an opportunity here to, as you said earlier, go to the convention with his delegates, get some planks on the platform, and broker some deals to have a lasting influence on the next 8 years of the presidency.
Thank you so much for calling us. By the way, there is some symbolic significance in the fact that John Edwards is planning to give this speech in front of some of the houses that have been built in the Ninth Ward in the wake of Hurricane Katrina.
That's right. And he launched his campaign there, too. And now he's going to end his campaign there, not in his home state, which is what politicians typically do. So he is going all the way from start to finish, making poverty his central issue and using the symbolic backdrop of the new face of poverty in the United States.
Chris from Long Island, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're okay. Were you surprised by John Edwards' decision?
Yeah, I was a little surprised by it because I agree that I assumed he would want to go for the hope of a brokered convention. But my, you know, you guys don't seem to allow enough of a rationale for why his candidacy didn't catch on. I mean, in the first place, the man, when he ran 4 years ago, was an entirely different candidate and basically had to repudiate every major position and vote he ever took in the Senate this time around. He apologized for more things, from the bankruptcy bill to his vote on the Iraq war. I think that was a significant problem for him. And secondly, I think that, you know, Mr. Lehrer said that many people don't vote necessarily a candidate who's most closely aligned with their views. But I think that there's a very good chance that his version of angry populism simply doesn't have that large of a following in this country. And that's why his candidacy ultimately went nowhere.
I agree with you that both of those things are factors. We did a segment on my show comparing Edwards' positions in the Senate to Edwards' positions during this campaign, and I think people saw that. I think also at a gut level, the revelation of his ties to a hedge fund that may have profited from some of the foreclosures and the subprime crisis, even if he didn't really know too much about what they were doing or profit personally, you know, registered
you really think
an
so?
Emotional
do you think,
blow.
I think do you think
some,
voters think, actually say, oh, gee, he voted this way? It hasn't hurt Hillary Clinton that much that she voted initially for the war in Iraq.
No, it's the
then
re-
apologized.
Right. Well, I think it's hurt her a lot in the Democratic primary base. I think it's raised a lot of suspicion about her authenticity. And I think the same thing was starting to get out about John Edwards. And then, you know, and then even his hair and his personal wealth. And
the three H's, they said.
What were the three?
His hair, his housing, and his, I can't remember the third one. It was Hypocrisy, I think it was.
So you know, I think people had a little problem with that. I think he, some more than others, I think that he strikes some people as slick, people who maybe have a certain impression of lawyers or trial lawyers, and then see how he's very good with the camera and very good with the language and maybe don't trust it a little bit. So I think the things that the caller raises, you know, are
I think
are
Chris's
factors.
Other point is really interesting, the angry populism in this
yes.
country.
Yes.
If we were talking about a European country where there was a possible recession, I think that that kind of message would have had a lot more resonance. In this country, people tend to disassociate
right.
themselves from, in
That's
many
right.
cases, from their own economic situation.
That's right. In fact, if you remember what it was that made him so compelling in 2004 that John Kerry felt he needed to put him on the ticket, it was in part that sunny optimism that Edwards radiated about how we can. And he was the candidate who talked so much about hope in 2004. And then he did change for this. Something I always wondered about, and you know, I think he changed along the way in this campaign, that he started talking about a hopeful new America where poverty could be eradicated, and that somehow it morphed into this anti-corporate message in an angry way. Not that Democratic primaries don't want to hear the flaws of corporations and the determination to curb their excesses, but I think you're exactly right, Leonard, and the caller is right, that the tone changed, and that tends to turn people off.
And Sally, you're on the air.
I think that his anti-corporate thing was tremendously important because corporations have really taken over our government. And so I think that the corporations, knowing this, are partly responsible for what has happened to his campaign. I really feel very bad about this.
You think she's one of those people who believes that corporations really control the country. I'm not sure whether it's true or not, although a fair number of books do come our way making that claim.
I don't know how they could have controlled this other than to not give him money. And funny enough, if he had done better in Iowa, if corporations thought that he was going to be the nominee, then they would have started giving him money anyway to make sure that they had a seat at the table.
Joe from the Bronx, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, first I want to say I love the show. I agree that I'm sad that he left. I think that message is true about the corporations. It's an important message. I think one of the reasons why he just lost momentum is that it's the old Democratic message, and people are really looking for something new. All Democrats are allegedly for the poor, and he just didn't get any traction. I think also this is about change and about cooperation. And you look at that, you look at the Republican side, McCain, who everybody hates, the conservative talk shows hate, and meanwhile he's getting traction. Why? Because he's a moderate. And I think that that's what our country is looking for, no longer fighting. And that's like I might think that we have to back Obama for that reason, because if we try to back someone who's as the Los Angeles Times Clinton's for Kennedy said, the two-fisted fighter, I don't know if we're going to win on that one. We need someone who's going to bring cooperation to the party.
What do you say, Brian?
Well, I think that obviously Obama is attractive for that reason, and I think it goes to another factor in why Edwards didn't soar to this nomination after starting in a pretty good position, and that is that though he could easily be a viable candidate, fate dealt him the hand that he was up against two historic rock stars of Democratic politics, both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, the way he shot out. If this was some other, if he had the same field or an equivalent field this year as you had in 2004, perhaps John Edwards would be the leading candidate on the Democratic side right now.
Now, John Edwards is making his way to the microphone. People are applauding loudly. And so let's be ready to switch. It's one of those things where his kids are there. Right now, unfortunately, I have a TV set on, and they have a commercial. So we
don't know exactly. We'll go quickly when he starts to speak. You know, I'll tell a story, Leonard, about his tendency to be late, and he's 25 minutes late. I was...
Okay, well, here he goes.
All right, forget that story.
Thank you. Hello. Good to see you. Good to see you, Bob. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. We're very proud to be back here. During the spring of 2006, I had the extraordinary experience of bringing 700 college kids here to New Orleans to work. These are kids who gave up their spring break to come to New Orleans to work, to rehabilitate houses because of their commitment as Americans, because they believed in what was possible, and because they cared about their country. I began my presidential campaign here to remind the country that we, as citizens and as a government, have a moral responsibility to each other, and what we do together matters. We must do better if we want to live up to the great promise of this country that we all love so much. It is appropriate that I come here today. It's time for me to step aside history can blaze its path. We do not know who will take the final steps to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, but what we do know is that our Democratic Party will make history. We will be strong, we will be unified, and with our convictions and a little backbone, we will take back the White House in November, and we'll create hope and opportunity for this country. This journey of ours began right here in New Orleans. It was a December morning in the Lower Ninth Ward when people went to work. Not just me, but lots of others went to work with shovels and hammers to help restore a house that had been destroyed by the storm. We joined together in a city that had been abandoned by our government and had been forgotten, but not by us. We knew that they still mourned the dead, that they were still stung by the destruction, and that they wondered when all those cement steps and all those vacant lots would once again lead to a door, to a home, and to a dream. We came here to the Lower Ninth Ward to rebuild, and we're going to rebuild today and work today, and we will continue to come back. We will never forget the heartache, and we'll always be here to bring them hope so that someday, one day, the trumpets will sound in Musicians Village, where we are today, play loud across Lake Pontchartrain, so the working people can come marching in, and those steps once again can lead to a family living out the dream in America. We sat with poultry workers in Mississippi, janitors in Florida, nurses in California. We listened as child after child told us about their worry about whether we would preserve the planet. We listened to worker after worker say that the economy is tearing my family apart. We walked the streets of Cleveland, where house after house was in foreclosure. And we said, we're better than this. And economic justice in America is our cause. And we spent a day, a summer day in Wise, Virginia, with a man named James Lowe, who told us the story of having been born with a cleft palate. He had no health care coverage. His family couldn't afford to fix it. And finally, some good Samaritan came along and paid for his cleft palate to be fixed, which allowed him to speak for the first time, but they did it when he was 50 years old. His amazing story, though, gave this campaign voice. Universal health care for every man, woman, and child in America. That is our cause. And we do this for each other in America. We don't turn away from a neighbor in their time of need, because every one of us know that but for the grace of God, there goes us. The American people have never stopped doing this, even when their government walked away. And walked away it has from hardworking people. And yes, from the poor, those who live in poverty in this country. For decades, we stopped focusing on those struggles. They didn't register in political polls. They didn't get us votes. And so we stopped talking about it. I don't know how it started. I don't know when our party began to turn away from the cause of working people, from the fathers who were working three jobs literally just to pay the rent, mothers sending their kids to bed wrapped up in their clothes and in coats because they couldn't afford to pay for heat. We know that our brothers and sisters have been bullied into believing that they can't organize and can't put a union in the workplace. Well, in this campaign, we didn't turn our heads. We looked them square in the eye, and we said, we see you, we hear you, and we are with you, and we will never forget you. And I have a feeling that if the leaders that if the leaders of our great Democratic Party continue to hear the voices of working people, a proud progressive will occupy the White House. Now, I've spoken to both Senator Clinton and Senator Obama. They have both pledged to me, and more importantly, through me to America, that they will make ending poverty central to their campaign for the presidency. And more importantly, they have pledged to me that as President of the United States, they will make ending poverty and economic inequality central to their presidency. This is the cause of my life, and I now have their commitment to engage in this cause. And I want to say to everyone here, on the way here today, we passed under a bridge that carried the interstate where 100 to 200 homeless Americans sleep every night. And we stopped, we got out, we went in and spoke to them. There was a minister there who comes every morning and feeds the homeless out of her own pocket. She said she has no money left in her bank account. She struggles to be able to do it, but she knows it's the moral, just, and right thing to do. And I spoke to some of the people who were there. And as I was leaving, one woman said to me, "You won't forget us, will you? Promise me you won't forget us." Well, I say to her, and I say to all those who are struggling in this country, we will never forget you. We will fight for you. We will stand up for you. But I want to say this. I want to say this because it's important. With all of the injustice that we've seen, I can say this. America's hour of transformation is upon us. It may be hard to believe when we have bullets flying in Baghdad. It may be hard to believe when it costs $58 to fill your car up with gas. It may be hard to believe when your school doesn't have the right books for your kids. It's hard to speak out for change when you feel like your voice is not being heard. But I do hear it. We hear it. This Democratic Party hears you. We hear you once again. And we will lift you up with our dream of what's possible. One America that works for everybody. One America where struggling towns and factories come back to life because we finally transformed our economy by ending our dependence on oil. One America where the men who work the late shift and the women who get up at dawn to drive a two-hour commute and the young person who closes the store to save for college, they will be honored for that work. One America where no child will go to bed hungry because we will finally end the moral shame of 37 million people living in poverty. One America where every single man, woman, and child in this country has health care. One America with one public school system that works for all of our children. One America that finally brings this war in Iraq to an end and brings our service members home with the hero's welcome that they have earned and that they deserve. Today, I am suspending my campaign for the Democratic nomination for the presidency. But I want to say this to everyone, with Elizabeth, with my family, with my friends, with all of you and all of your support, this son of a mill worker is going to be just fine. Our job now is to make certain that America will be fine. And I want to thank everyone who has worked so hard, all those who have volunteered, my dedicated campaign staff who've worked absolutely tirelessly in this campaign. And I want to say a personal word to those I've seen literally in the last few days. Those I saw in Oklahoma yesterday, in Missouri, last night in Minnesota, who came to me and said, "Don't forget us. Speak for us. We need your voice." I want you to know that you almost changed my mind. Because I hear your voice. I feel you. And your cause is our cause. Your country needs you. Every single one of you. All of you who have been involved in this campaign, in this movement for change, in this cause, we need you. It is in our hour of need that your country needs you. Don't turn away, because we have not just the city of New Orleans to rebuild. We have an American house to rebuild. This work goes on. It goes on right here in Musicians Village. There are homes to build here and in neighborhoods all along the Gulf. The work goes on for the students in crumbling schools, just yearning for a chance to get ahead. It goes on for daycare workers, for steel workers, risking their lives in cities all across this country. And the work goes on for 200,000 men and women who wore the uniform of the United States of America, proud veterans who go to sleep every night under bridges or in shelters or on grates, just as the people we just saw on the way here today. Their cause is our cause. Their struggle is our struggle. Their dreams are our dreams. Do not turn away from these great struggles before us. Do not give up on the causes that we have fought for. Do not walk away from what's possible, because it's time for all of us together, to make the two Americas one.
You've been listening to live coverage of John Edwards as he ends his bid for the Democratic nomination. And later tonight, we will be carrying coverage of Rudy Giuliani's announcement. That's at 6, hosted by Amy Eddings. At 10, the Republican candidates will meet at the Reagan Library for the last GOP debate before Super Tuesday, and you can hear their plans for the economy and other issues that are vital to voters this election. That's tonight at 10 on AMA 20 WNYC.